Welcome to the Talking Blues Extra Show, your midweek extra source of all things Everton. I'm here with Paul. You may have noticed I'm not Jerry. If you're on the podcast, you might hear, I don't sound like Jerry, I don't look like Jerry. So yeah, I'm Tom. I'm going to host this extra show for us. It's going to be an extra midweek thing for you to listen to, because a week's a long time without Everton. So we're going to give you a little extra. I'm here with Paul McAllister today. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, mate. Let's rock and roll. I know normally when we've got Jerry here, we've got a nice soft-voiced American to keep us all balanced, but we'll do it. Just the two of us, just two Scouse lads to this week.
Yeah, a bit of Scouse power add to the podcast. We should be all good. But
four segments for you on today's Toffee Blues Extra Show. Firstly, we'll be in conclusion, Everton 3, Brighton 1. We'll be discussing the match of the weekend and summing it all up for you, what we thought about the game. Secondly, we'll be talking about Roberto Martinez to Madrid. Those rumours that have come out recently, there's some substance to them, so we're going to be talking about what we think of those rumours and why Martinez has been linked with such a crazy job. Thirdly, we'll be talking about the best Everton goal celebrations, following on from Seamus Coleman's celebration at the weekend. And finally, we'll be talking about danger men, Chelsea away, as we go to Stamford Bridge this Sunday. We're going to be talking about who the danger men are for Chelsea and for Everton, from me and Paul.
Our first segment, anyway, we're going to start off with, in conclusion, Everton 3, Brighton 1. It was a good win. I've been in Barcelona over the weekend, unfortunately, so I managed to catch most of the match, but my girlfriend dragged me out to the sports bar halfway through, so I managed to catch most of it. But what did you think of it, Paul? Can you catch me up on what happened?
Yeah, I was sat in the lower ladders. I thought we started really good, you know. I don't normally... What really helps the atmosphere at Goodison, if there's an early chance, if the game kind of just starts and it kind of just plods along and there's no real flashpoints for the first 15, 20 minutes, then the crowd just tends to, I wouldn't say get restless, but just tends to not really get fully involved in the game, sort of thing. And the players kind of sense that, and there's not really any urgency. But what a thing I really liked is that we came out attacking straight away. We looked like we'd been told to get an early goal. Sigurdsson had a few chances earlier on. He probably should have done better with at least one of them. We should have been 1-0 up after 5-10 minutes. But, he came close. But there was no sense that, oh, God, we're going to regret missing that. I thought from the opening 20 minutes, it's a matter of time here. A goal's coming. Nobody worry. And then it came. And Richarlison's goal was absolutely lovely. The finish was great. And the build-up play coming from the corner counter-attack, that was absolutely brilliant, the type of football that we'd never have seen that last season, and we didn't see much of it under Ronald Koeman, and we definitely didn't see much of it under Martinez in the last two seasons. So goals like that, it was a real highlight reel type thing, and best goal at Goodison I can remember probably since maybe Tom Davis's one against City.
Yeah,
and I don't say that lightly. It was such a lovely goal to behold, and to see it from where I sit in the local, to see it going all the way down the other ends of Charlton, getting on the end of what was like a 50-yard run by Sigurdsson. It was just brilliant. And then the equaliser, rather. The equaliser came about 10 minutes before half-time. And I think it was just maybe a bit of complacency. I think after we got the first goal, kind of we got a bit... took our foot off the pedal just that little bit. We kind of let them get on the ball a bit more and establish themselves. And that's all they needed. They got a corner. We played a little 1-2. With whoever they've got out wide, he got it in with a great cross, and Dunk, I think that was it. Dunk got above Suma, nothing Pickford could do, 1-1, and everyone's just kind of scratching their heads thinking, how's that happened? These haven't had a sniff, how are we 1-1? And after that goal went in, it was a little bit shaky. Well, no, not shaky, I take that back. It was just a little bit subdued. It was like our confidence had been shaken a little bit, but thankfully we got in at half-time. Silver said what needed to be said. We came out second half and it was just back to normal. We really, really played great second half. So the Richarlison goal, the second one, that was gorgeous as well to watch. And that was just opportunism. That was one thing Lukaku never seemed to do. He never seemed to be alert. Do you know what I mean? When there was danger, like if you just paid that extra split seconds worth of attention, you could have been on goal then. That's what Richarlison done. And he got us the third, went around the goalie. Brilliant goal. Coleman's great goal in between that, just after half time, that thunderbolt of a strike. So to wrap it up, I've spoken a while here. I just thought it was a really good day at the office. There was a little wobble in the first half. But it only lasted about 10, 15 minutes. And when we got by in half time and we came back out again, everything was fine. There was nothing to be concerned about at all, really.
Yeah, I think the goal wasn't too... There's nothing to be worried about. But when I watched it back, I just thought... It's another one. I blamed it on Zonal Mark, and I know Dunk outjumped Zuma, and Zuma didn't really get to the ball as much as he should have done. But I was looking at it thinking, isn't that another goal that we can put down to Zonal Mark? And I don't think the players have grasped it as much as they should have done by now. I think they've been working with that system for a while. It's not one that I'm massively an advocate of anyway. But if Silva's going to do it, we've got to work with it. And I just don't think our players have quite grasped it so far. We're still not defending corners convincingly. Would you put that down to a lack of experience with Zonal Martin?
Yeah, probably, because a lot of these defenders we've got who've come into the team over the past year or 2 years. Did any of them play zonal marker at the previous clubs? I don't think they did, really. Zuma didn't play zonal marker at Stoke. I don't think Keane ever played zonal marker at Burnley or last season under any of the managers we had then. Holgate's never really done zonal marking at any point when he's ever been in the first team. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's taken a while to bed in, probably taking too long now because, what's that, at least half a dozen goals already this season that we've conceded from it. So, as you said, Silva looks like he's not going to get rid of it. He's going to persist with it, and we're just going to have to get used to it. But I agree with what you're saying. We can't be just never getting any better. We need to see progress with it. We can't just be conceding goals every week or two, thinking, oh, how avoidable was that? Do you know what I mean? Because it was avoidable, that goal.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think they were beautiful goals, though, on the bright side. It was a brilliant performance, and every single goal was just like one of the best. Like, they weren't average goals, they were all wonderful goals, as you say. The first one on the counter attack, seconds after defending a corner, just straight up the pitch. It's so refreshing to see speed like that in an Everton team, like, especially when we lack pace so much last season. It's really refreshing to see. And obviously the other two goals, great to see Coleman silence his critics as well. I know Coleman got quite a bit of stick last week. He has been below par recently, since he came back from injury a while ago. But he hasn't really hit the heights since his first game back from injury, really. But he's proving his critics wrong now, and he's probably coming back. And although he sometimes looked a little shaky defensively, going forward, he's still one of the best. He's still completely got it, hasn't he? He's got that fierce shot on him as well. And he's definitely you can't put him down, because he'll bounce back every time. And obviously the other goal from Richarlison was lovely as well, to see him go past Shane Duffy, slalom around him after this loose pass from Lewis Dunk, because I think they're two of the most solid centre-backs in the Premier League. And I know they're not at the best standard in terms of team, with all respect to Brighton, I do think they're two very solid centre-backs, and Richarlison just kind of bullied them in a way. So I think in a way it's starting to look like we're finally replacing Romelu Lukaku. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, to be honest. I mean, when we signed Richarlison, I don't think anyone envisioned him going up front in a number nine role. Not really. But I don't think we'll see him on the left now much. I think he's kind of established himself as a striker. No, like Arnautovic did at West Ham under Moyes.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, because... He's different from Tosin, isn't he? Tosin's a good finisher, I think, but he maybe lacks a bit of speed, and he lacks the physicality against the biggest defenders, guys like Duffy and Dunk, who are big strapping lads. You know, Tosin's not going to win any kind of physical battles with them, you'd think. So Richarlison's got the build for that. He can lead the line, he's quick, he's alert, as I touched on earlier on. He's not greedy, in a way, not in a bad way. I mean, obviously, if he's clean through on goal, he's not going to pass it to somebody. But he's kind of willing to sacrifice himself when he needs to. And that's good. That's a good thing in having a striker. And one thing I like about him as well is that he doesn't kind of, when he gets hurt, he doesn't kind of just like roll around on the floor and make a big scene and, you know, what's the word? He's not like Will Saha the other week where he's constantly moaning to referees going, oh my God, tell these people, tell these players to stop kicking me, get the physio on. Oh my God, I feel so sore. He has been targeted the last couple of weeks. He has gone down and he has got a bit of treatment, but he's always kind of like, he's got that attitude of, right, just put a bandage on it and let me get back on quick.
Because
I thought when he went down in the first half, I think it was not long before half time, I thought he was going off. Personally, I thought, he looks like he's in a bit of pain there and he's limping. I think we'll have to make a change here. I saw Tosin and Calvert-Lewin warming up. But no, he went off to the side. He was off the pitch for 20 seconds and he ran back on and he just ran it off. And I really like that in a striker. We need that sort of attitude. I don't want to have a player who's kind of like made of glass type thing where, yeah, he's got a lot of flair, he's got a lot of ability, but oh, as soon as someone bullies him, he kind of just sulks and feels sorry for himself. I really like that about Richarlison. He's got a kind of, right, if you're just going to kick me and target me, then I'm just going to get on the ball and embarrass you and make you basically make a show of you, which is what he's done to Duncan Duffy. As you said, he ran rings around them all afternoon.
Definitely he did. You can show his physical side as well. He may have to beef up a little bit if he's going to be a centre forward long term, but I think there was one occasion where he shoved Dunk over in the air. They had a little area battle and Dunk ended up on the floor, and that's quite a feat against a 6'5" centre back or something like that, and he knocked him over, and he's definitely getting that physical side of the game, because we've seen him maybe in his first couple of games as centre forward. Obviously he's a quality centre forward, but he was getting pushed around a little bit, but he obviously, as you say, he can't take it, but he can give it out now as well, it looks like. So that's definitely a promising sign anyway. So there was a lot of promising signs from the match anyway, but really good match, Everton 3 Brighton 1. So we'll wrap it up there anyway in conclusion. Rumours linking Roberto Martinez to Madrid, because I think we can call it a little bit more than rumours now. It's widespread in the media, and the Belgian FA, I think I'm right in saying that the Belgian FA have came out and spoke about it to the press. So there is something, there's something behind these rumours. And what do you think of it, Paul? What do you make of these rumours?
They're out of left field, aren't they? I think it's just kind of just goes to show that there's not a lot of strong candidates around right now, is there? Because I've got to believe that when they sacked Lopetegui, that Martinez wasn't the name that was jumping out of everyone's mouths. It sounds like they've had a talk to Conte and they've decided that Conte's not really their cup of tea. Who else is there? A couple of other managers who you'd think they'd like back. Angelotti's tied up at Napoli. I'm sure they'd have him back if they could have him. Klopp and Pochettino are both tied down to Tottenham and Liverpool, respectively. I know they're talking about Mourinho as well, but I think that would be a massive backward step if they go back to Mourinho. So it kind of just seems like they're looking for a flavour of the month type managers, and that's pretty much what this is. They're coming off a good World Cup, and he's just kind of got his name in the headlights. He's got his name in the lights, in the headlines, rather, because he's kind of... He's coached a lot of big players to big performances in the World Cup, but what I'm saying is, achievement-wise, does he deserve to have his name linked for such a massive job like that? No, of course he doesn't. I mean, what's on his CV when you really think about it? He's got an FA Cup. Okay, fair play to him. You can't ever take that off. There's a lot of really good managers who've never won cups in their careers, and he's won one, so fair play to him. But there's also relegation. There's also two bottom-half finishers with a 25-goal-a-season striker leading his line. He did very well at Swansea, but he didn't really stick around at Swansea for too long, did he? He didn't exactly do what Eddie Howe's done at Bournemouth. He kind of had a couple of years there, and then he kind of moved on and let someone else get all the glory in the form of Brendan Rodgers. And since he's gone to the World Cup, he's got to a semi-final with a team that, on paper, you'd think would probably be the favourites to win it.
Definitely.
So, Martinez, I'm quite shocked that he's getting linked with this in a way, but I'm also not shocked, because there always seems to be managers who at international tournaments kind of do well for themselves and end up scoring a big job of it. So it's not shocking in that sense, but does someone of Roberto Martinez's calibre deserve a massive, massive job like that? Probably the biggest job in football? No, of course he doesn't.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think I've said a lot about him in the past. I do think he's a cup manager. I know he led us to the high place finish in his first season, and that was quality. But I do think he's more of a cup manager. He likes to treat every game as a cup final kind of thing. He's a very positive manager, as we know. He almost too positive at times. He likes to dress things up, and he was it done everyone's heads in the end. The way he was so positive, and he just, even if he just got beat 3-1, he'd be like, oh yeah, the goal was great, and the players performed really well. He's the type of manager, he's just one for, I think he was at his best with international management, to be honest. I think that was his forte. I think in international management, he found the job that was right for him. It was a decent job to get, the Belgian manager's job, with the golden generation that they have, all the quality players. Any manager would have loved that job. You're going into a World Cup with some of the best players in the world, really. And I think he did really well, to be fair, with Thierry Henry. But I just think he found what he's good at, so why doesn't he stick at it? And he's very lucky to be linked with this job, because club management is very, very different to international management, in my opinion, anyway. And in terms of his achievements at club management, I know apart from Everton, obviously, he's never really managed a big club. So to be linked with Real Madrid, I just think there's no one else really available. So that's why I think he's been linked with them.
Yeah, but if you're looking at it from Real Madrid side, I think what are they really after there? Are they just after a stopgap manager who'll just kind of keep the boat in the water until the end of the season, and then he can go again and look for another big name, and hopefully there'll be one available? Or do you want to just kind of start the rebuilding process now, right in the middle of a season type thing? If you want a stopgap, then I think you're probably better sticking with what they've got, Solari.
Yeah.
But if they want to kind of start the new dynasty, the new era, right now, then, I mean, I've just said it, I don't think Roberto Martinez is the man for that job, but I think a manager of his age and his experience, and at the stage of his career that he's at, would be the sort of right approach to go for a manager who's kind of in that part of his career. But one thing I'll say about Martinez, touching on what you said, I think he's found something he's good at, and I think he'd be very, very silly to leave it now, because I can't think of many managers over the past 20, 30 years who've took the Real Madrid job and then left the Real Madrid job with their stock higher than it was when they first joined. How many managers just get their reputations shredded by that because they can't deliver crazy expectations? I think Zidane is obviously an exception. Maybe Ancelotti as well. He picked up a European Cup with them. But how many other managers have they had where they just kind of chase them out the door and then they struggle to build reputations back up? I mean, who have they had recently? They had Mourinho. He went to Madrid and I wouldn't say he did badly, but he didn't do what they wanted him to do. And he kind of had to basically come back to England for the Chelsea job because it was available. I mean, he didn't take too much of a hit, obviously. He walked straight into another job, but he was he went into the Real Madrid job as probably the best manager in Europe after winning the treble with Inter Milan. And then he kind of had to come back to Chelsea to kind of prove himself all over again. And who else have they had? They had, I believe, Fabio Capello.
Yeah.
There's another one they've had in the last 10 years. Capello kind of... Was that Capello's last club job?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Capello had that.
Yeah,
Capello had that and kind of didn't do much either, and then basically just had to go into international management. So when you go into international management at his age in his 60s, it's basically semi-retirement, isn't it? They had Pellegrini as well. Same thing, didn't really manage much. So if you're Roberto Martinez, you're looking at it thinking, do I really want to go for that now? I know it's a massive club with prestige, but do I want to go to that job now and probably not achieve what they want me to achieve? Or there's no way he can match what Zidane's just done, is there? So he'll come out to that Real Madrid job, and I think it's very unlikely he'll come out to that Real Madrid job with loads of other Champions League level clubs knocking on his door demanding that they can have him. I think if he's going there, he's just setting himself up to fail because it's just such an impossible job to do successfully.
Definitely. It's a massive risk, isn't it? It reminds me of David Moyes at Man United, to be honest. It's one of them where it's the job of your career. You're gonna. Mm-hmm. It's a massive opportunity, but with that, it comes a massive risk of jeopardising your whole career, really. So I just think it is a massive risk.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the main reasons why he's been linked with them is attacking style, because obviously, like, people say La Liga isn't the best quality, apart from the top clubs. I just think the quality is decent, but obviously Madrid want an attacking manager, and that's exactly what Martinez is. So I assume that's why they've linked with him. But personally, I think Arsene Wenger going to be a better suit myself, and I think he's been he's recently agreed a deal with AC Milan just coming through recently, I think. But
yeah,
I would have thought he'd be a better option than Martinez anyway, but it's an interesting one. But
yeah, one thing I'll say about Martinez as well,
yeah.
I mean, I make no secret of the fact that I don't really have a lot of time for him, in terms of, as I said, his management ability. I don't really think there's much there as people made out. But one thing I'll say is, if he takes that Real Madrid job, I think it would say a lot about him as a person, in the sense that he's meant to be a proud Catalan. He's from the Johan Cruyff, Pep Guardiola, like, school of football. He's a disciple of that style. He's a very proud Catalonian, to the point where whenever he's referred to in like newspaper articles, especially when he was at Everton as well, he was always asked to be referred to in, you know, publications as a Catalan, not a Spaniard. He doesn't like being referred to as a Spaniard. So if a proud Catalan like him goes to join Real Madrid, and again, I know it's a massive club, probably the biggest club. It's such prestige and such a thing to have on your CV. But if you're willing to kind of just throw away your own identity and your own principles, as he likes to bark on about, to go and just manage a club like Real Madrid, who are kind of the opposite of what everything you say you believe in, I think that would kind of, I'd lose even more time for him as kind of as a bloke. He did that. It would be like me or you going to managing Tory FC. Do you know what I'm coming from with that? So if Martinez gets offered that job and says no to it, I'd think a lot more of him as a person, because I think it would take a lot of guts to say no to the Real Madrid job, and say no to it, not just from a footballing point of view, career point of view, but also from kind of like a conscience point of view, because I think he'd be making life very difficult for himself and life very difficult for his family back in Catalonia if he took a job like that. So I'm hoping that's kind of on his brain, and it's something he really thinks about if he does get the phone call and asks to come in.
I completely agree with you, especially at a time where the friction between Catalonia and Spain is rife at the moment. I know with the vote last year, I think it was last year this week, about the big vote where Catalan people were arrested for an uprising against the state. And for Martinez to just completely contradict himself and go to the enemy as such would be a controversial move, wouldn't it? Definitely. And I do think, as you say, it would make life difficult for him personally, above his career. And he's got to put that above his career, really, hasn't he? His personal life. And
I think so.
Yeah, definitely.
Someone like Guardiola, even if he was on the bones of his arse, do you know what I mean? Let's just say he got sacked from three straight clubs and he somehow got offered the Real Madrid job, I don't think he'd take it.
He'd
never take it, no matter how much money they offered him or how much of a state his career was in. He'd never take that. And I don't think people like, if he was alive, Johan Cruyff would take that. Or if he ever becomes a manager, I don't think someone like Messi would ever take that, or Iniesta would take that. Yeah. So I think for a Catalonian to take that job, to really consider taking that job, I think that makes me not have a lot of respect for them personally. So overall, I think I'm not too shocked that he's getting linked with it. I definitely don't think he deserves to be linked with it from a career point of view, but I don't think he should take it. One, because he's probably setting himself up for a massive fall, and two, because it would just, as we said, it would go against everything he claims to believe in, and I'd like to think that Martinez is not as false as that.
Definitely, I completely agree. Yeah, I think Pep Guardiola would probably rather take the Akron and Stanley job than he would Real Madrid, in all honesty. But we'll wrap it up there anyway. It's really interesting. That was an interesting segment about Martinez, yeah. Hope you enjoy this one. We're going to talk about Everton goal celebrations, because we've obviously seen James Coleman at the weekend silence his critics with one of these, with covering his ears, to show that his fans basically, his critics need to shut up and just watch him play, because he will pull out the goods eventually. He's Seamus Coleman. He's not going to let us down, is he? He's Everton through and through. But we're going to talk about Everton celebrations through the years and the ones that stick out for us. So, Paul, what are the ones that stick out for you?
Kale's the obvious one, isn't he? That's an iconic one. I love Kale's boxing of the corner flag. A couple of others that we kind of didn't see a lot, maybe one-off celebrations, was Jimmy Jagielka's like mad cartwheel I can't remember who it was against for the life of me, but I think it was the team in red. Maybe Southampton or Sunderland or someone like that. That made me laugh.
And is it between us one, of course?
The crazy dance.
One
I really liked was it wasn't really like a goal celebration. It was kind of more just like a victory celebration. Do you remember Phil Neville and the penalty shootout against Chelsea down at Stamford Bridge? Where he took it cool as you like, scored it, had no reaction, walked straight up to the fans who were going mental, turned just slowly and like really, really dramatically just kind of moved his arms up like that in front of everybody as if he's just scored a 40-yarder in the Champions League final.
Typical Phil Neville fashion.
just Phil Neville, just the most dad celebration ever, do you know what I mean?
That was in that beautiful cream kit, wasn't it? That lovely kit we had a few years ago.
Yeah, fair kit, yeah.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. Though.
I love that. I love that to this day. Delafeu as well. Delafeu, I had one that I liked. The machine gun celebration. I mean, the one against Arsenal, that belted equaliser he scored, and he ran right up to the Everton fans. That was a really good one. I enjoyed that. And I'm just trying to think of a few others. Have you got any that stand out in your brain that you really, really liked?
Obviously, the kale boxing one is the one that sticks out in my mind. But the one I thought as well was Ross Barkley against Bournemouth. I absolutely despise Ross Barkley. I'll get that straight before I even say this.
We're divorced from Ross Barkley.
He's a proper idiot. But it was a great celebration when he celebrated before he'd actually scored the goal. It showed great confidence. I would have loved him to miss it in a Chelsea shirt anyway. But in an Everton shirt, it was great to see him celebrate before he scored the goal. So that was one that sticks in my mind, and then obviously the other one was Tim Howard. I was going to say no, Tim Howard when he scored against their
Bolton. Tim Howard didn't celebrate, did he?
He didn't celebrate at all. No, he out of respect for Adam Bogdan, you know, plays. I think does he still play for Liverpool, Adam Bogdan?
No, I think they've long since bid him off. I think he's back in the Championship now.
Oh, is he? He didn't celebrate at all, but it was a great goal. But I was meant to say Tony Hibbert against AEK Athens and his testimonial match pre-season, when it wasn't really his celebration. He just stood there and stuck his arms in the air, but everyone else's celebration when the pitch was flooded with Everton fans, and it was just a great club celebration altogether, really. So that was another stick on my mind. One as well we mentioned before, Duncan Ferguson against Liverpool, because we were saying there's got to be some derby ones, so the tattoo against Liverpool, so that's another classic. And I like Yakubu with the butterfly as well. I mean,
I was disappointed we didn't see one of them at the weekend. He came on the pitch at half time because he's apparently involved with this friendly we're having on Tuesday night the Kenyan side. He's got something to do with that, and he's going to be like presenting some sort of trophy. But he came on the pitch and basically had a go at that. Do you remember, hit the bar?
They've
brought that back this season, and Yakubu came on and had a go, and I was hoping that we'd see the butterfly celebration, but sadly not. So, I had one in my brain just then. It's gone. It was going back to Derby. A Derby goal. That was it. Do you remember Lee Carsley's? To this day, that's my favourite kind of Everton photograph / image.
Yeah.
The Pylon. That's just, for me, that's Everton personified. Yeah. That's kind of just everyone in it together. The emotion in Cahill's face. Well, Cahill's kind of like on top of it all, isn't he? With his arm in the air and sort of like crying with joy, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's my favourite photo of just Everton. And the fact, the goal that went in as well. If you look back at that old Lee Carsley goal against Liverpool, it wasn't really that good a strike, was it? I always remembered it as like some. I always thought it was some absolute pile driver that kind of just funded past Kirkland. But I watched it again for the first time in a while recently, and it was just a really sort of like tame hit of the ball. You'd think that would be bread and butter for a goalkeeper, but Kirkland was just kind of caught completely wrong-footed, and it just bobbled past him and went in the net really, really slow, and just the sort of just like, oh my god, it's gone in type reaction of Carsley himself and everybody else, not like, oh my god, yes, we've scored, just kind of,
oh really?
That really went in?
Yeah, really?
You know what I mean? And he kind of just running away, he can't believe in his luck, and everyone's just jumping on top of him. So, yeah, that's an absolute belter celebration. I love seeing that photograph whenever it pops up anywhere.
But, than the goal.
yeah, That's what I remember about that goal, that game, that image. I don't remember the ball going in the net. I don't remember anything else. I just remember that image of the pilot. And one or two of us, I liked Pienaar. Pienaar would pull out a bit of an odd celebration every now and then, whether it was, didn't he run over to the park end and side of like have a mess around with a South African flag or something?
Oh yeah, I think so.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I think it was might have been. Yeah, I think it was Martinez's first season. Might, forgive me if I'm wrong with it. I think it might have been the last goal he ever scored for Everton. Because that was kind of, that was kind of maybe the last season that he was kind of in and around the first team properly. It was, can't remember who it was against, but it was at the park end and he scored and he ran over straight. Like, it's like he had it in his mind what he was going to do. If he scored a goal, that was, he knew exactly what his plan was. He just ran straight over to this flag and fixed it and then walked away like it was nothing. And I remember a goal he scored in the Europa League as well. I think it was against Sporting Lisbon, where he kind of like picked his leg up in his hand and started like playing it like it was an air guitar. That made me laugh. So, I like odd celebrations. I mean, some of them are cringe, some of them are just epic, some of them are tongue in cheek. But I like celebrations. It shows a bit of personality in the players. I'm not really bothered about just the standards. Oh, let's just all run away and cheer. Let's kind of. Let's create an image for the newspapers type thing. Let's create a back page.
Yeah, definitely. Love a bit of Lee Carsley. Like, I used to hate Romelu Lukaku when he used to score. He scored some belter goals sometimes. He just stand there. He just wouldn't do anything. He didn't even look happy to score. Lukaku used to just stand there. You're just thinking, mate, did you see what you've just done? And he just wasn't fazed by it. But I love a bit of enthusiasm. You can tell how much the player loves Everton by the celebration sometimes. And like we said about Coleman, last weekend, you can just tell his passion for the club, and he's really bothered, whereas Lukaku sometimes really wasn't. But
look at the goal.
Definitely. Yeah, but go back to derbies as well. I have to mention the good old.
How could we forget that?
When his head got caught by Pepe Reina, and he headed the ball into the back of the net, 3-0. That was a lovely one.
Dave Carragher, nightmares for weeks.
That was a great one. And also Andy Johnson against Arsenal as well. I think that's more of a better goal than the celebration. But when I think it was stoppage time against Arsenal, it was snowing or hailing, and it was just pelting down. It was like an evening match under the lights, and Andy Johnson scored against Arsenal, and we just went crazy. I don't even know what Andy Johnson did at the time, but that was a great goal. But that's more of a goal than a celebration. But yeah, they're our favourite celebrations anyway. And we're going to talk about danger men, about Chelsea away. We've got Chelsea on Sunday at Stamford Bridge. It's going to be a difficult game, and it's a game where key players can really affect the game. So we're going to pick out one player from each team that we think can really be the danger man in the game and cause trouble for the opposition defence. So who are yours then, Paul?
Should I say Chelsea's and then ours?
Go with Chelsea's, we'll go with Chelsea.
Yeah, go with Chelsea. The danger man for Chelsea, for me, I really rate that Alvaro Morata.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's not had the best of times since they signed him. He's not scored buckets loads of goals, but I think he's a good striker when he's got his confidence right and when he's kind of in a system that sort of suits him. And he looks like he is coming into form now. And he's got physique as well. Do you know what I mean? He's the type of striker who can score a header from a corner. He can get on the end of things. He can be a slotter. Our Michael Keane and Zouma, it's not a case of where if they just do one thing, then if they just make sure they get this one aspect of their game right, then they're completely taking them out of the game. He's not that type of striker. He's not like a Lukaku. You just think, right, as long as I just stay on him and don't give him a yard of space, then he's probably not going to have much of a sniff. Morata can kind of, what's the word? He can diversify his game, sort of thing. So, Morata's a player I really like, and I think Jesse Garnaghey, who's going to surely play a defensive midfield, he's going to have to really, really keep an eye out on not only.
He is, definitely. I just think he's like, he was signed to be like a world class striker for Chelsea, and he was expected, like, big things were on his back. He was number 9, I think, at first. He had to move him to number 29 because he couldn't really deal with the pressure. So that was an interesting little move. But no, he was signed. Massive things were expected of him. And he couldn't really produce that at first. He failed to really produce that. And it looked, last season anyway, like they had Morata and Giroud, and they were two average strikers, but they didn't have a world-class one. But you always thought if Morata could hit some form, then he could be a world-class striker, because he's got the attributes, as you say. He's got the diverse ability in his game, where he can change things up and he can make things happen. So yeah, I do think he's one to look out for. Would you say Gana would have to mark him then? Like kind of a man marking kind of thing.
Ideally, but he's gonna have his hands full of Hazard. You'd think, wouldn't you? And other players like Barkley and probably that, I can't say his name, the guy that got on loan from Real Madrid. Kovacic. Sorry if I've made a meal of that, but yeah. Our midfield's going to have its hands full. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I just think Keane and Zouma need to really, really communicate with one another. They can't just kind of let their minds wander and daydream, because I really think Morata's the type of player where if he gets half a yard of space in and around the box, he can finish. Do you know what I mean? He's not an absolute donkey, not by any stretch of the imagination. He's a very good striker when you give him the space to just do his thing, and or if he's getting the service from his creative players around him, like Hazard and Jorginho and people like that. So my danger man would be Morata. I really hope that we kind of focus on him in the week, and we think, right, he might not start, but I think he probably will.
Yeah.
So I think he's just scored a brace in this last game, hasn't he? So you'd think Zari's not going to drop him. So if Morata's the player who I've just got a nasty feeling that he's probably going to get a goal against us, and to prevent that, the defence is going to have to be better than it was against Brighton, because as we saw, they switched off for 10 seconds and a goal went in, and that's against Brighton from a set piece. We can't be doing that against Chelsea, because they've got five or six players who could just easily put one past them. So my danger man for Chelsea is Morata, and the danger man for us that Chelsea need to worry about is Bernard.
Yeah,
I really like Bernard. The last couple of games against United and against Brighton, and I wouldn't say he's played badly, not by any stretch. He's just kind of not been at the forefront of the good stuff type thing. He's not had any real standout moments. He's not put in any brilliant passes or shown any outrageous bits of skill like he did against Leicester. So Bernard, I think, is a player who's not going to be dropped. He doesn't deserve to be dropped. Yeah. He's going to be in the lineup, and I think he's due another good performance, and he's going to be motivated. He's going to be seeing the likes of Richarlison scoring goals. He's going to be seeing the likes of Luchman, you know, taking his chances when he's being given them. He's going to know that Walcott's not going to be, what's the word? Walcott's not going to give his place away lying down. So I think Bernard's going to look around and think, yeah, I'm going to have to bring my performance levels right up here to make sure I stay in this team long term. And I think he's due a goal as well. He's not scored yet since he brought him in. And he is a great goal scorer. He scored some brilliant goals for Shakhtar. So I want to see Bernard break his duck. And I think if Chelsea kind of don't show him the respect he deserves, because he is only a little fella, isn't he? I think it could be very easy for opposition defences to just kind of not pay much attention to him type thing. Just be one of these players who kind of just slips under the radar, because they think, no, he's a twerp, him. He's not going to, he can't hurt us. But no, he's an outrageously skillful player. So I really want to see a good performance from Bernard, and I really, really hope that he gets on the score sheet soon, because I think once he gets one, he'll just take off.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes when I'm watching him, I just think, how have we managed to get him? Like, he's an absolute quality player. I know some people are saying he lacks the physicality and the size for the Premier League. Obviously, you get pushed off the ball a little bit when he's really 5'5" or something like that. But the quality he has, he's a top-class player. And sometimes he's on a different wavelength to the other players. And hopefully that will come with time if they play together enough. But when he gets going, he is a quality player. And hopefully on that left side, he can make things happen. And I do think if he can weave between the gaps with Chelsea. Obviously, it's difficult with the Sarri side. He's very tactically aware, but I think definitely he's one to weave between the gaps and make things happen. So I agree with you there. My Chelsea man to watch would be Eden Hazard. I think he's coming back into the team at the moment, and he's coming back from injury, and he's world class. He's one of the best players in the world. I put him top three, I think, in the world. I think he's the best after Messi and Ronaldo. I know a lot of people say Griezmann, but Mbappe. I do think Hazard at the moment is the third best player in the world. So I do think whether he's at the top of his game, having just come back from injury, is debatable. And he came on for about 15 minutes this last weekend, and he got an assist. So I just think he just makes things happen, as you say, a little bit like Bernard, but obviously in his prime. Eden Hazard is absolute quality. And I remember a game, though, where Everton played Chelsea, and Ghana man-marked Hazard. And he pretty much marked him out of the game, to be fair. And I remember...
Was that the FA Cup?
I think it was, yeah. Idrissa Gueye gave an interview afterwards in French and said, someone asked him in French, where is Hazard? And he said, he's in my pocket. And Hazard walked past the time. It was great. But, I'm sure he can do that again. But I don't think Marco Silva will ask Gueye to man mark Hazard if he plays at the weekend. I think Gueye will be asked to do his normal job. But I do think Hazard is definitely one to watch, because he's probably going to be the most capable player on the pitch. So I do think he's definitely one to massively look out for. But in terms of Everton's danger man, I've gone with Richarlison, because having scored a brace the weekend, his confidence is going to be sky high, and they've just got to watch out for him, because I just think he can terrorise any defence in the Premier League, even the quality of Chelsea. They have very good centre backs, obviously, as Piliquetta is a great defender, and Rudiger as well. But I can see Richarlison running rings. I can't run rings around them, even, because I just think at the top of his game, no one can deal with him. So I think if we do get the ball into his feet and he can just knock it around them like he did last weekend, I do think he's definitely I think he's our danger man at the moment, the man in form and the man who can get us goals. Definitely yeah. In the counter attack, because I think that might be the way to play. I think we are going to take it to Chelsea at the weekend. But if we are going to play a little bit on the counter attack, then Richarlison's the man. He's going to be the one making the runs forward. So that's my danger man. But
I don't know. Should we talk about the elephant in the room?
Yeah, go for it.
We're going to have to,
aren't we? We're going to have to. We're going to.
Do you think he's going to do anything? Do you think he's going to be good? Do you think he's going to stink? What's your gut feeling?
I've got a horrible feeling he's just going to have a great game, the game of his life, because he's in some good form at the moment, and I've just got a horrible feeling he's going to come into his own and just have the game of his life. And he's one of those players, if he's got a point to prove, he will play well. But The only thing that's making me feel better is, have you seen the clip of that shot that he had at the weekend? And it was like one of those, we saw it a few times for Everton, but he's in some great form. But he picked the ball up just outside the box and he absolutely ballooned it, like, into the car park. So that was encouraging. But yeah. apart from that, he's at the top of his game. He's definitely someone to watch out for. So I'm hoping he doesn't have a good game, but what do you think?
As you said, I've just got a horrible feeling he's going to either score a goal or he's going to set one up. But if he scores a goal, I promise you, it won't be like a pile driver. It'll just be the worst little tapping sort of, oh my God, why did he have to be the one who did that type goal? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, one thing I really hope Sigurdsson has a brilliant game. I hope Sigurdsson makes a show of him and shows Evertonians that he is an upgrade from Barkley. And he's like, yeah, what do you need Barkley for when you've got me?
Yeah.
I'd love that. I'd really love that. I'd love Barkley to be on that pitch thinking, Christ, if I was at Everton, I wouldn't get in that team over him. Do you know what I mean? I want Sigurdsson to go out there and show that he's a proper number 10 and he's better than Barkley was. But as you said, Barkley's just one of those players. He's one of those players where if he gets the bit between his teeth and he's given a simple job to do, then he kind of rises to the occasion and impresses, doesn't he? But thing about Barkley, if he scores, what do you think he'll do? Do you think he'll give it the big one? Do you think he'll be muted? Or?
He'll go crazy, I think, personally.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think he ran us into the ground. I think with the contract, I think that showed he wasn't that bothered about Everton, and the fact that he ran down his contract and robbed us, in my opinion, of 20 million at least.
Yeah.
But I don't think he has many ties. I know he's given a couple of little sly digs to Everton, hasn't he, in his press conferences, even though he couldn't get his words out very well. He's given a few little slide digs to Everton, and it's sad to say he's lost his ties with the club, having been there from such a young age and being a lifelong fan. But I do think he'd go crazy. I don't know, I just got the feeling he'd just go mental, and It's sad, really, because he's one of ours. But what do you think? Do you think he'd go crazy? Or do you think he'd be out of respect?
I think he will.
Do you think he will?
I think he will, especially if the fans are giving it to him beforehand. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, when Lukaku scored against us for United, I mean, he gave it to the fans a little bit. It wasn't too over the top. I think he just cupped his ear, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was it. But as you said, I think Barkley will give it them the big one. Like, he's Liverpool scoring at Goodison, do you know what I mean? Like Gerrard used to do and things like that. I can see that type of reaction from Barkley. And if he does that, then whatever. That's what I kind of expect. If he did nothing, if he just had a muted celebration, then if anything, I kind of feel a bit... What's the word? I feel like that would be a bit condescending. Do you know what I mean? It's like, no, we hate you. We want you to know we hate you. You don't have to show us respect. Yeah. We're not going to give you any respect.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can... I don't want it to happen, but you can go mad. Just go mad with your own supporters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't like all this wishy-washy crap where players kind of feel obligated to not celebrate when they clearly want to. I mean, I don't mind it when players kind of were at a club long term and then they didn't leave under bad circumstances. They left on nice terms and then they just out of respect don't celebrate.
Yeah.
Like someone like Lampard against Chelsea when he scored a penalty for City. I don't think he did. But when players, when you know that they hate that former club, and that they want to go mad, and they just don't for some reason. Maybe they just feel like uncomfortable doing it.
Yeah.
I want to see the celebration. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to see the celebration, but I want to see the emotion from him. I've got emotion towards him. We're not shy about showing how we feel about him, so you don't have to be shy of showing how you feel about us. Do you know what I mean? If you get the opportunity to, so hopefully we don't even have to. It's a mute point that he doesn't do anything. Hopefully he's just anonymous, or someone goes through him after 10 minutes and he limps off.
Yeah, hopefully, Andre Gomes or De Gea will actually go through.
Oh, yeah, Andre Gomes makes an absolute show.
Yeah, just run him off the park. But I'm hoping we don't see some kind of Adebayo. Remember him against Arsenal when he ran the length of the pitch. But hoping on anyway, fingers crossed for the game against Chelsea at the weekend. We'll wrap it up anyway. Thanks for watching. Please like, comment and subscribe to the video, and give us a follow on social media as well. Our Twitter handles are below our little pictures now. Give Paul a follow on Pete_McAllister123 and myself at TomClark40, and give us a follow on Everton News Feed, the Toffee Blues on Twitter as well. So thanks for watching. Tune in next time on the Toffee Blues Extra Show. Thanks Paul for coming on as well. I've got to thank you for being a pleasure.
No problem, mate. No problem.
Yeah, so thank you for watching. Tune in next time on the Toffee Blues.